Welcome to World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN. I'm David Dye. Our guest today is Jamie Liddell, a British-born soul singer and electronic producer currently based in Nashville. He's released 5 studio albums. His new one is called Jamie Liddell. We'll start off with this performance of Don't You Love Me. Don't You Love Me with a long decay from our guest, Jamie Liddell, who is here behind the decks and samplers. And you don't have to tell me, all kinds of very cool equipment. Jamie, good to see you again.
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks for having me back.
You know, I've been listening to this record a lot, and I love the last couple of records. You got very deep into your crooner thing. Mm-hmm. This one seems to kind of balance it with some great, great tracks. Was that the idea?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I'm just one of those artists that just likes to explore, I guess. I'm just not ever going to be content just to do one thing.
Right.
And, you know, I think for a long time I considered that some kind of problem or something, you know, like the schizophrenia or the, you know, the kind of all over the mapness. But now I embrace that. And I kind of like, I just call what I do like postmodern soul, you know. I'm a mixed up kid and I'm kind of proud of it. So, yeah, doing Compass, I kind of felt like I could go any direction.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, pun intended. So this is the kind of direction I chose to do this album, Jamie Liddell, which is much more focused. It's really about kind of like, yeah, that synth kind of boogie pop that I grew up listening to in the 80s, 90s, Janet Jackson, Jamie Lewis kind of, you know, Cameo, you know, Entombed, all that stuff, you know.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Now, when were you, you were a kid then, or how old were you then? Because you're not that old.
No, I was born in 73, though, so I definitely grew up in the 80s, you know, and yeah, that's it. You know, I miss that. I miss that kind of, I think a lot of people hated that evolution in music when the drum machines came along. It's funny, on the last record, for example, I worked with James Gadson, you know.
Yeah.
Very renowned drummer. He played with, you know, Bill Withers, you know, Marvin Gaye, all, a lot of greats. And he actually got put out of work for a long time by the Lynn drum machine, which Prince made famous. And I brought it into the session, that very drum machine, and I saw his eyes kind of glance over at it with a kind of strange kind of, I don't know, a little bit of disdain. And I kind of wondered what I'd done, you know. But apparently that drum machine put him out of work for like 10 years or something. But he's back, you see. It's funny how things turn in full circles. The drum machine is almost kind of like a little cold these days. But on this record, it's kind of drum machines meets real drums.
I was going to say, there's nothing very... This is a very warm record. You mentioned some people. I was even going to throw Stevie in there because some of the way you interact with the tracks is very, very much like what he would do in those days.
Wow, man. So. Thanks so much. Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I moved to Nashville with my wife, and funnily enough, the guy who helps repair my equipment, he used to work with Stevie. It's one of those classic Nashville stories, you know. He was not going to ever talk about that or mention it, but somehow I got, you know, to probing him like, hey, so what else are you doing? And eventually he was like, hey, you got some nice keyboards here. And I said, well, how do you know? And he's like, oh, I used to be Stevie's keyboard tech for Songs in the Key of Life. So obviously that was it. I had to like chew his ear off. But yeah, man, obviously Stevie, he's the man. And yeah, he wasn't afraid to mess with stuff. He was always dabbling in the newest stuff and, you know, playing with synths, playing with drum machines, whatever, you know, was around that inspired him. And I kind of definitely tried to take that philosophy, like, you know, nothing is sacred in a good way. Do you know what I mean?
Is kind of messing around with the newest stuff sometimes for you messing around with older stuff that you're not familiar with in the past? Or
Definitely. Yeah. Like for this album, for example, I had a huge mixing desk in my home. Physically, it wasn't possible before because, you know, it's just 12 feet, this thing. It's a massive boat. But it was the same console that was used on a lot of massive hits, things that I loved, you know, Jamie Lewis, Prince, and they were all mixed on this great desk. So for me, I know I was like, you know, experiencing almost the rush of how it must have felt to mix those records back in the day. And I did all of this record and recorded it and mixed it and produced it all at my house in Nashville. So I think I'm extra proud of that because I feel like I got great results sonically and I didn't have to compromise at all. And it was all done in the home studio environment, albeit kind of a pretty decadent home studio. You know.
How did you end up in Nashville?
Yeah, it was it's kind of a strange evolution, kind of a natural...
Weren't you in Berlin last time we talked or at some point?
Yeah, I was. I was there for 9 years and great, loved my time in Berlin, miss it often, and moved to New York to be with my now wife, who was at the time my girlfriend, and loved New York, of course, and she'd been living there 11 years and it was difficult to pry her away. And but we needed space and we just weren't going to get that in New York. And, you know, like I said, I've been making noise, you know, making noise in New York is just, you know, I would talk about like the noise that annoys. I was that man. Apartment 5A. I was getting the knock on the door every 5 minutes. I made friends with my neighbors in the end. And they were a little bit too friendly, actually. But But that's another story. But yeah, it's tough to make it in New York, as they say. So Nashville's just an amazing place. Great community, amazing place to make music. I mean, it's all true. And a really quickly evolving city. So I'm happy to be there. It's a cool time for Nashville, I think.
So you can't mix on headphones, huh?
I have tried. Man, you should have heard how quietly I was mixing Compass in my New York apartment. It was obscene. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's nice to turn it up every now and again, you know.
Jamie Lytle is our guest today, and we're hearing music from the. It's taken you a while to get the title, but you. It's a self-titled record.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you want to do next?
Well, I want to, like, you know, I've long been kind of a fan and kind of advocate of the live looping approach to making music. And I kind of guess that's kind of how my career started. So I'm going to take it back to a track that I made in 2005, Multiply Era. The song's called A Little Bit More, live loop style. Here we go.
Cause it already is quite enough for me. Like a ticket for a little while, but a little while ain't gonna be what you had in mind. Cause what you had in mind, you know we never find in a fella like me. In a mystery from a history, I'm the kind of fool that can't stand in front of me. In a mystery from a history, I'm the kind of fool that can't stand in front of me. Soon as summer shine, willing to do it.
I'm laughing over here because I closed my eyes just to remind myself what this would be like for the radio listeners.
Because, yeah,
because it's, that may have sounded just the same as Don't You Love Me, but very, very much different in terms of how it was, the music is produced. And and Jamie, all along, that's been your modus operandi to be as entertaining as possible behind all these decks. And I'll tell you here, just for me, you are definitely bringing it because you know, it is a challenge for somebody who does what you do to entertain.
Yeah, I mean, that's long been the kind of battle for the electronic musician, I think. I mean, it remains kind of a bone of contention, I think, amongst traditional musicians and journalists even today after all these years. I remember watching a program about Synth Britannia, I think it's called. Great BBC documentary about like the rise of synth pop, you know, Human League, Depeche Mode and stuff. And like the working class English were like, this isn't music. And they're not even breaking a sweat behind those keyboards, you know? So I definitely aim to break a sweat behind my equipment. I'm permanently kind of sweating, it seems. So I must be doing something different, that resembles work, and that's kind of my philosophy. I like to work for my beats.
Well, that's part of it too, but the other part is that you can get a lot of emotional impact in with this too, and that was part of the other, I think people would say, was it's colder music.
Yeah, and it can be.
Yeah, but it can be attractive as colder music too, I must say.
Yeah, so. Well, thanks. But I mean, I think moving from Brighton to Berlin was a huge deal for me because I just felt like, and now I kind of understand it a bit more, just the German mindset, having come out of World War II, they invented so much electronic music out of necessity in a way, just because musicians wanted to step away from what was like a really anglicized music, you know, scene. They didn't want to make something that sounded American or English, so they invented like, you know, Can and Faust and all these crazy synth bands that inspired obviously like Bowie to do Low and so on, you know. So going over there and playing electronic music was always something very easy in a way. Mm-hmm. They had the repertoire, they had the vocabulary. So it's been more of a challenge in a way to spread the message to other territories. But it's interesting now in America, in the post-EDM era, you know, the kids are really digging the electronics again. And it feels like I started doing this in 2000. And it's funny just how things come in waves, you know. I welcome the waves. I ride them.
You gave a really good description of what it was like in German electronic music. But talk a little bit about what it was like in Brighton for you and what the influences are there. It's much more influenced by things like dub and stuff like that, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, if you walk along the seaside in Brighton on an average kind of like summer's afternoon or whatever, you'll see a lot of strollers, you know, kind of hippie families. Like, they have to be relatively affluent. It's a relatively rich place. It's kind of London by the sea. But at the same time, it's still got quite a lot of student population. It's a kind of hip and happening place in a way, but it's also got that lazy, forever Sunday feel that you get the seaside. So it's a strange mix. And I think on the entertainment side, me and Christian Vogel, who I started making music with back in the day, and he was the main reason I moved to Brighton, actually, just to kind of collaborate with him, which actually happened, which was a real stroke of luck and fate. So much seems to come down to luck in this business, which is strange, but I call it, maybe it's fate. Let's go for that instead. Mm-hmm. He and I were trying to do something different in Brighton, and it always fell on deaf ears. Well, invariably it fell on deaf ears. It was like, oh, you guys, come on, just give us the 4/4. And this was the era of, you know, Fatboy Slim, Big Beat, and it was all huge, you know, hitting around the head, you know. It's like you leave your brain at the door kind of stuff. So we were trying to do something a little bit more cerebral, and it didn't go down well at all. So like I said, when we played finally a gig in Germany, a Super Collider, it was like, oh my God, these people get everything. We were like superstars over there. I was like, what's been going on? I'm leaving. I'm out of Brighton. No disrespect to Brighton. I love the place, but it's an uphill struggle sometimes. And sometimes you're better loved as a kind of expat, you know. Living in Berlin was the best thing I ever did, because when I moved there, it became painfully hip to come from Berlin. So that was always the press angle, you know, and so on and so forth. But I loved the move. It was really good for me. It gave me a lot of confidence as a human to leave my comfort zone and to make it in a strange place and met a lot of great people along the way. Berlin's a real special place for sure.
So you want to go back to this this new
yes.
this new thing?
Yeah, I've got one more tune. This is this is a real good example of like an ambitious home recording. This one's called Big Love, and it goes like this.
That is Big Love from the new self-titled album, Jamie Liddell. Jamie, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
For doing this live. And so is it fun getting back to doing this all on your own?
I mean, hey, you know, it's really, I mean, it brings back crazy flashbacks. I mean, doing solo live electronics is definitely riding. It's a very complicated thing to get balanced. You're always in a precarious situation, but I must admit, I do like that.
Do you ever make a mistake that you have to go back and cover?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, but I think that's part of it. You know, one of the cool things about playing genuinely like live electronics is when you do make a huge mistake or whatever, so long as you're really trying, it's amazing how the audience is totally behind you. In fact, it's almost better.
Yeah.
You know, if you do it flawlessly, people don't really, almost don't know what's going on. It's kind of like, someone like as a DJ, if they make a slight error, you can feel like, oh, you can see beyond the surface. And sometimes that's what you want. You want to be fighting for it.
Yeah.
So, I aim to make mistakes and, and recover.
And recover. It's not how you fall down.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly right.
I'm David Dye. World Cafe Words and Music from WXPN is produced at WXPN in Philadelphia. If you'd like to hear more of our World Cafe sessions and get daily cafe alerts, you can sign up at our website at worldcafe.npr.org. As always, thanks for spending your time with the World Cafe.